You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 22nd of November 2014 on Monocle 24. Literature from a men's fashion perspective, mastering the art of editorial and creative production. Why are so many definitively digital platforms turning to the physical? From an increasingly popular online accommodation booking service to online retail, everyone wants a piece of print here on The Stack. Today on The Stack, we welcome one talented young editor as he takes up a beautiful challenge to edit a literary magazine produced for one of the biggest names in publishing by two of our favourite magazine people. We'll be flicking through the pages of the brand new Happy Reader. We'll also be joined by one of the UK's top design critics, Patrick Burgoyne of The Creative Review, as he talks us through some surprising print industry trends. And we go to Finland, where, one year on, a plus-sized arts title has had a very big impact.
The office does have the air of last night's party or last month's party. You've got a few balloons on the wall, sort of half deflated, and a pair of swimming trunks up on there. Anyway, you know, there's vestiges of a party.
All that and plenty more besides coming up on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. I'm delighted to be joined this week by Seb Amina, British writer and editor and editor-in-chief of The Happy Reader. His words have appeared in magazines and newspapers around the globe, including The FT, Guardian, Times, Gentleman, Fantastic Man, Esquire, many more. His first book, The Breakfast Bible, was shortlisted for Food Book of the Year in the Guild of Food Writers Awards. And he spends his time between Paris and London. Lucky you, Seb. Tell me a little bit, first of all, about The Happy Reader. If our listeners are not familiar, or not yet familiar, perhaps we should say. What exactly do they have to look forward to with this exciting collaboration?
It's a distinct possibility they haven't heard of it, because it's brand new. The first issue is just coming out this week. So The Happy Reader is a literary magazine, or rather a magazine about reading, which is slightly different to other literary magazines in that it's very focused on the act of reading, and it's focused on being, I guess, quite entertaining. We love other literary magazines, but often the focus is writers writing about writing and that kind of thing, whereas this magazine really tries to explode books and reading outside of that space and do something quite unusual and new. So every issue has two sections, two parts, the first of which features a very, very long interview with one well-known avid reader. In issue one, that's the actor Dan Stevens, who you may recognise from Downton Abbey, The Fifth Estate, that kind of thing. And then the second part, we select a single book and spend a long time kind of exploring it in various different ways and through various different disciplines and art forms. So we have writers, we have photographers, sometimes even fashion designers and chefs, doing things that are inspired by what they find in the book, the ideas, the images, the characters, that kind of thing. So we call that the book of the season. And there's always an attempt to make it slightly seasonal feeling. What we mean by that, we don't really know, but we just try and do it anyway. So the first one is The Woman in White by Wilkie Collins, which is a fantastic Victorian thriller from 1860. And it's a real page-turner. It doesn't feel like a 150-year-old book at all. And we've got stuff like a white Gothic fashion shoot on Hampstead Heath, a recipe for some bonbons that appear in the book, and then some very good writing about everything from the year itself, the year 1860, to the state of the soap opera, which is obviously the kind of natural descendant of serialised fiction.
It's very exciting stuff. We'll talk a lot more detail about that later, and about this sort of the idea of precious print, this meeting of, you know, Penguin, we've got the Fantastic Man guys and all that sort of thing with you a little later. We're also delighted to be joined on today's programme by Patrick Burgoyne, one of the UK's most thoughtful and respected design commentators, who's been the editor of Creative Review magazine for a number of years now. Before joining the magazine, he worked in marketing, first for The Body Shop, later for the University of Westminster. He's the author of several books on design and visual culture and is a revered critic in the field.
So you're very kind.
Welcome back to the show, Patrick. We're going to talk, well, there's a few themes, obviously, which I think Seb's already touched upon a little bit. One thing we're going to talk about in the programme today, I think, a little bit, is this idea of how other businesses, digital businesses in particular, sort of need the print outlet. And it's interesting, isn't it? I'm sure you have a view on exactly how many examples of this we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, I think there's something really interesting going on here. So when I was thinking of what to bring along today, I thought, well, I like a theme, you know, journalists like a theme. We like to kind of construct something that's going on around a number of things that we've seen. And I think it just struck me how many magazines that I'd seen and been sent and so on that come from what are essentially digital businesses. And it seems to sort of separate into two related but slightly separate things. So on the one hand, I think you've got digital businesses like Airbnb, who are just about to launch a printed magazine, Monotype, the Type Foundry, which of course used to be very much about making real things, big lumps of metal, but now is completely digital business, which has recently revived its Recorder journal, One Fine Stay, which has a really lovely magazine, Net-a-Porter, of course, that launched the magazine. So there seems to be something about digital businesses who feel that they need this physical presence. And then on the other side, we've seen quite a lot of media outlets or media platforms which started out as digital. So we've seen the likes of It's Nice That, for example, Protein. And I heard from a friend of mine, Jeremy Leslie, who I know is a friend of the show as well, who told me that CNET, you know, the tech blog, is about to launch a quarterly printed magazine. So we've seen from that side of things a lot of those people going into print as well. So it's kind of fascinating. What is it about print that they feel is necessary and relevant to them and their audiences and delivers something that they can't do through the digital tools that they have?
Well, Seb, let's pick up on that in particular, because I mentioned in terms of the Happy Reader, it's a sort of a natural fit, if you like. It is a celebration of great print, but it's this alliance of, as you said, you know, it's all about, I guess it's a literary magazine, so it's obviously got this sort of publishing background as well. Were you very sort of comfortable with that relationship between, in this case, sort of Penguin? We've got our friends from Fantastic Man, who are sort of part of the design process. Is that an easy and a sort of a relationship that makes sense to you on a lot of levels?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I guess in terms of brands making magazines, Penguin are kind of a natural because they are already a very prestigious and they've got a great tradition of putting the written word into interesting places and doing interesting things with that. And the relationship that, I mean, we should say the magazine's a collaboration between Fantastic Man magazine and Penguin Press. And the nature of the collaboration is a little bit like that of an author with a publisher rather than of, you know, a brand with something that they want to push a message through. So they've been very kind of hands-off with it. And they'll help with proofreading, transcribing, that kind of thing. And they'll have an editorial point of view in terms of, does this work as a text, maybe? But they're not being a kind of pushy brand or anything about it. It's a very much more kind of hands-off relationship. So yeah, I think it's a very natural fit. And people sometimes say, well, you know, why wouldn't you do a website or an app to promote reading? Why are you doing a print magazine? And the kind of implication of that is that maybe print is a bit old-fashioned or a bit old hat or a bit old school. And actually, I think print is now going into a strange kind of post-internet phase where things are starting to appear. The fact that websites are starting to make print magazines, it's just kind of bonkers. It reminds me of, you know, people sometimes ask, well, if the web had been invented before newspapers and then somebody said, well, let's print off all the news stories from yesterday so you can read them on a nice handy piece of paper, we might think that was a fantastic invention. But I think it's the order that things happen made us think that perhaps digital technology is better somehow than print, whereas in many ways it's not always.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, do you think we'll see this more and more? You've got other titles like Hazlitt from Random House, of course, with Chris Frey, the editor. Do you think we'll see more publishers looking to do this, to celebrate exactly that fact?
I hope so. I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for other publishers, but I really hope that they do, because I think, I mean, in a way, it's trying to think again about the role of publishers now that a lot more tools are available to people and a lot more ways of presenting the printed word are available. And obviously, you know, you have ebooks, but online you have all sorts of other ways of distributing words. You know, in many ways, it's a very powerful way of distributing words in all sorts of ways. And we're starting to see that way of thinking now mature and be applied to print as well.
Patrick, I wonder, is there ever an unease when you sort of see these projects that are coming maybe from these alternative avenues, either from, you know, the internet or from explicitly digital businesses, then onto the printed page? With your sort of design hat on, does it ever concern you that the motives are going to start entering into the sort of design process? Or do you think that if you're getting a great title, it doesn't matter whether it was online before or if it's going to go online after? As long as it's well designed, you're happy.
I don't know that part of it is a concern for me. I think, you know, if we look at some of the titles that we've got around the table at the moment, I think there is an understanding that the magazine experience is different from the online experience. I mean, there have been some titles who've tried to translate literally what they do online in the same treatment of headlines and stories and so on. And I don't think when you see that in printed form, it rarely works, because there are things about pacing and the kind of verve that you need in print and the differentiation between different types of content and the authority that you can convey in print that are different to a website. So I think there is an understanding that they are different media and work in a different way. I think where people will have some concerns, I suppose, is, you know, one of the big buzzwords around at the moment is content marketing or native advertising. And obviously that brings with it concerns about how clearly things are labeled and whether people are being duped into reading promotional messages which are dressed up in the language and in the clothing of editorial. So there's a big debate about that. I suppose in some ways, when you know outright that this is a magazine from a brand, well, that kind of gets past a lot of those concerns because it's clearly labeled as being Airbnb's magazine or Monetize magazine or whoever. So in some ways, it's maybe, you know, more people will be more accepting of this content marketing idea in that context rather than things which pop up in what is ostensibly an independent editorial environment, but almost sort of sneaking in under the radar as advertising. You don't quite realise that's what they are.
We're going to take a short break now. We've got a little package coming up. But when we return, though, with my guests, Patrick Burgoyne and Seb Mina, we'll talk in a bit more detail about some of those themes. And maybe we'll delve into this stack of magazines before us and see some of the people who are doing that job rather well. So stay tuned to The Stack.
Monocle's mighty December-January double issue is on newsstands now. Inside, you'll find our Portugal survey and our soft power survey too. But there's so much more to savour.
In Culture, we explore the rebrand of France 24, from the new anchors to the extensive makeup room.
In the design section, our big interview takes us into the studio of one of fashion's biggest brains, Herr Karl Lagerfeld.
In the edit section, we drop anchor in Antwerp to show why Belgium's second city is our first choice for Christmas shopping this Yuletide.
The December-January double issue is on newsstands now. Make sure you get your copy by becoming a subscriber at monocle.com.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. Now, how often does your favourite magazine come out? Weekly? Monthly? Biannually? Some decide to go for just once a year. It's what the team at Fat Magazine in Helsinki do. The art magazine recently launched their second edition at the Frankfurt Book Fair, where Finland was the guest of honour. Especially for The Stack, our correspondent Mark Bosworth caught up with one half of the team, Pekka Toivonen, the art dictator, and Jonathan Mander, the text designer, at their office in Helsinki.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge thing. I mean, I guess it was kind of, a lot of it was focused on the kind of literature, which we represent from a different point of view than probably most of the people there.
But words are your best friend, I read, in Fat magazine. And Fat, I think, is it's down to you. Finnish art today or famous art tomorrow?
Well, I think with magazines, it's never just about the words. Words might be my best friend, but then it needs to match with something else. I mean, magazines are always a visual kind of art.
Pekka stuck his thumbs up then when you said that.
Yes, definitely. It's a combination of various medias that become one media, a magazine.
So the party's over, guys. You've done your ritz and glitzing in Frankfurt, and I came to a really nice party in Helsinki in an old harbourside area. What goes on now? Like, is it a bit of a come down?
We're proud of what we've done, you know, so we kind of carry it with pride, the magazine, and we want to push it forward. I mean, of course, if you go, we're surrounded by boxes here, so you can kind of talk about a kind of a come down when you're throwing boxes out of the door so that people can read the magazine.
The office does have the air of last night's party or last month's party. You've got a few balloons on the wall, sort of half deflated, and a pair of swimming trunks up on there. Anyway, you know, there's vestiges of a party.
Always it's been like that, and always will seem like that. The party's just ended, but it's about to start.
Is this now like a period of downtime for Fat Magazine? I mean, when do you start getting the cogs in motion for, you know, issue 2015?
We got to focus on the art that's out now. You know, I've been promoting the issue edition 2014 so much lately, and I will do that more because we need to focus on what's out. And then maybe sometime early next year we'll start thinking about the next one. Now we have to get some money and funding. So it's a lot of work, nothing else but work.
Yeah, I was going to come to the financing point as well, because you do receive financial help from the Ministry of Education and Culture, don't you?
Yes.
How do they help?
The Ministry of Education and Culture saw the fact that the magazine making is a form of art, and then they gave us a little kickstart, and that's why FAT exists, and I hope it will exist in the long future as well.
How's it been with getting FAT out beyond Helsinki and beyond Finnish borders?
We have a good distributor, French distributor called Export Press, which carries us in the various... We try to focus on art metropoles around the globe, so any decent, good quality magazine boutique should have FAT on their shelves.
Yeah, the difficulty is not getting it out there. It's getting it to the right people. It's getting it to the right shops and making people aware of it.
So how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't know what you can do. You can just kind of try and spread the word in all the ways you can. I mean, Becca's been talking, and where have you been talking recently?
Modern Magazine?
Yeah, I was in London in this Modern Magazine seminar. And yeah. I was in this Munich event. Wherever somebody offers me a mic, I will grab it and, you know, fulfill it with FAT.
Do you like those sort of public events, getting out there?
Yes. Yes, it's hilarious, and it's a lot of fun, and it's nerve-wracking, and I still believe in the end it can be beneficial to us and our mission. So I would need to say yes.
What's the state of affairs in Helsinki at the moment with the magazine industry?
I think it's not maybe in the industry, it's not necessarily seen that much, but I think like bubbling under, like magazines with more of a, with their own take, like a personality with some character, there might be something good coming. I think we're one example of that kind of, where it's not as much as about any industry, it's more about like a reaction against what's going on within an industry. It's like where you actually are expressing whatever it takes to make a good magazine in a more kind of liberated way, I think. So I think there's a lot of kind of talent here, but maybe it's not seen as much within or in magazines. And maybe there could be more of that, because magazines are all about bringing different kinds of expertises together and kind of celebrating that.
Yeah, I think there's like two kinds of industries, the bulk industry and then the independent printing and publishing, which is like finally blooming here as well. There's not many other magazine makers in the indie side, but there's a lot of like potential, and I think it's kind of coming and blooming, and we've been also doing quite good magazines for the commercial side as well, you know, trying to pitch for the better stuff whenever. Finns read a lot of magazines, but they're happy with crap, and we're here to make the difference and make the change.
I guess a lot talk about kind of how Finns love rules, and I think that's also seen like in the magazine. So if it's done according to the rule book, Finns might be satisfied, but our mission is to break the rule book and kind of see what comes out after that. And I think that will take some time for people to kind of learn a new way of looking at magazines and a new way that they can express what's essential.
That was Mark Bosworth speaking to the team behind FAT magazine in Helsinki. You are listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards, Seb Amino and Patrick Burgoyne still with me. Hearing a little bit about FAT magazine, and I wonder, I mean, Seb, it's a bit of a challenge, I imagine, with an annual title to sort of retain a great deal of momentum. Is that something, I know some of the sort of creative forces behind Happy Reader, are they enthused to have another platform, if you like, to sort of get their creative juices flowing?
It's a combination of enthusiasm and sort of terror, because it's quarterly and that's quite quick. I can't imagine how much work it goes into making a monthly magazine, but you know, we're doing this quarterly and already issue one's just come out and I'm starting to sweat and fret about what we're going to put in issue two. But you know, in terms of sources of creativity and where that momentum comes from, I mean, we've got a fantastic source of that in the sense that we're looking at one different classic work of literature, which is possibly the finest source of creative matter you could imagine, you know, and of images and that kind of thing. So yeah, there are no worries there.
And Patrick, do you think that there is a problem? We talked already about sort of the pace of the content. Do you think the pace of the production, the creative process, can be a challenge at times? I mean, is it difficult to maintain momentum? Do you imagine if you are only getting that one chance per annum to vent your creative juices?
I imagine, and I also imagine, knowing how magazines work, that even though you've got a year to do this thing, I wonder how much of the work gets done in the last 5 days. I would say probably about 90% of it. I mean, even on a monthly magazine, you know, you try and plan. You try and say, right, you know, this is week one, we're going to have this done in week one, this in week two. Inevitably, it all happens in week four. It's just the way it is.
If anyone was in Midori House this past week, they may have noticed similar things going on up on the editorial floor, but less about that. Patrick, let's continue with our look through your stack of magazines. We're talking a little bit about, you know, the journeys to the page for some of these titles, the fact that they maybe come from a digital business or they're driven by a web product. Are there any in particular that you think, well, either new ones that have struck you or ones that you think, you know, this really does a great job and, you know, it stands on its own and delivers its message with real sort of editorial flair and confidence?
Sure. I mean, I'm quite intrigued, sorry for the rustling, but
we like a bit of rustling on the stack.
I'm intrigued by Pineapple, which is Airbnb's magazine, and I tried to get a copy of it bound, but there weren't any available yet, so all I've got is some printouts I've done from the PDF. But this is quite interesting to me. As I understand it, the distribution is going to be via their hosts, so you'll be able to pick, you know, you'll see this magazine on the coffee table when you go to your apartment or whatever. So, you know, ostensibly it's doing the job that a lot of kind of travel magazines do, but I think there's an underlying idea about it which ties in with Airbnb, which is if you go and stay there, you kind of experience things like a local would experience them, rather than staying in some grand hotel where you're just going to get quite a superficial experience. So I think they're trying to convey that through the magazine. I'll pass it around a little bit, but so I think that's a really interesting idea, a really interesting kind of brand extension, to use a bit of jargon, and I'm fascinated to see where they go with that, and also I guess from a brand perspective, what role that plays for Airbnb, how it reinforces what's unique about that Airbnb experience. So I think both in, you know, formally as a piece of design, I think it's really interesting, but much more so from a branding point of view, its function I think is very interesting, and the role that it's playing. For outright beauty, I'd flag up the Monotype Recorder, which I think is really beautiful piece of print.
Perhaps you could sort of describe that for our listeners if they've not seen this edition, because it's certainly quite arresting, isn't it?
If you're a print fan, you know, it's all here. You've got this beautiful foil block cover. You know, you've got these lovely opening spreads. And I think it's quite interesting to see that even with these brand magazines, a lot of the language is familiar from so much of the independent magazine publishing that we've seen over recent years. You know, so you've got the uncoated stock. You've got some interesting experiments with different formats and sizes. So Guestbook, the One Fine Stay magazine, is quite a nice, handy little small size, whereas, you know, Monotype Recorder is much more traditional magazine format. But you've got real big hits of typographic loveliness and lots of great illustration. You know, it's really kind of full-on beautiful experience. And of course, a lot of us who put out commercial magazines, you know, sometimes you struggle with the advertising content in terms of where to place it and whether it detracts from what you're trying to say with the brand. One of the advantages that some of these guys have is there's no advertising in here. So, you know, you've got a completely open playing field.
A beautiful blank canvas to fill.
Exactly.
Seb, talk to us a little bit about then the sort of the genesis of Happy Reader and how it fits into that, because it's interesting what Patrick says there about, you know, picking up the best of, you know, sort of independent sector, some of the kind of more zine-like almost qualities of a lot of those publications, which are very popular, people always mention on the stack. How mindful were you and the rest of the team when creating this that it needed to have a feel almost of its own, you know, on the newsstand or from wherever the readers were going to source it?
The word newsstand is interesting because, I mean, this won't be in WH Smith's, it won't be in your local corner newsagent, and that kind of, I think that's interesting in terms of size. You know, it's a very unusual sized magazine, somewhere between, I guess, A5 and A4, but a very nice kind of handy size to stand with your umbrella and read it at the same time at the bus stop as you wait or something. So I guess when you're coming from a different place of the magazine, when you don't have to sell copies and sell advertising, you can do quite unusual and interesting things with the way that you lay it out and the kinds of decisions you make about size and that kind of thing, because you're not trying to stand out from 40 other magazines on a shelf somewhere. The design, it's fantastic, and I wish I could take more credit, but it's kind of, it's thanks to the geniuses over at Fantastic Man, really. And it's sort of, you know, somewhere between a zine and a literary almanac and a modern style magazine. It doesn't feel like a literary magazine in terms of being Victoriana or anything. Someone described it as vaguely spooky, which is interesting. But it tries to be very visual in a way that maybe literary magazines often aren't. They're often very text focused.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. As a sort of an editor, were you sort of very mindful of that? Or were you pretty easy that, you know, you've worked in a great deal of quite varied publications, you know, you're familiar with the particular rigors, I guess, of all these different markets. Were you comfortable with the fact that it was, you know, maybe taking that more visual approach to the literary, at least in part.
I really welcomed it, to be honest, because I feel like literature in general, as culture seems to have become more sort of pigeonholed, literature sometimes is in danger of feeling like a niche pursuit or something like a specialist pursuit. And this attempts to kind of maybe break out of that paper bag a bit and do something else. Because there are so many more readers than there are people who will read the review section of the newspaper or who will pick up a copy of a literary magazine in the London Review bookshop or something. I think of my own mum, you know, she's an avid reader, but she probably sees certain literary magazines as something in inverted commas literary. And I love to read that stuff, but I feel like there's a huge audience out there who's looking for some kind of something a bit more open in a way.
And Patrick, tell me a little bit about your sort of reactions to Happy Reader. I don't know if you'd had a browse through perhaps today. What did you make of it? Because it's interesting, particularly the sort of the two segments. Do you think that sort of marries up well? Are you an early enthusiast?
I think it's beautiful. I mean, it's a beautiful object. I think it's trying to do something really different and quite exciting. I'm really interested about the way the relationship with Penguin works. You could imagine this being a real marketing vehicle, and it tied to, you know, whatever hot new book they've got coming out. But as I understand it, it's not tied to that at all. The Woman in White, they don't even have a sort of special edition of that coming out. It's much more subtle than that, I suppose.
I mean, The Woman in White's a sort of evergreen title, you know, and it's not a book in copyright, so there are loads of versions of it out there. It's kind of, obviously the Penguin one's very beautiful, but it's we deliberately don't want to have the latest hot reprint or the latest hot release as our book of the season. And we deliberately want to go somewhere perhaps more idiosyncratic with our choices. And then Penguin aren't really keen on influencing us in any other way apart from that. So the second book of the season will be The Book of Tea, a book from 1906 by a Japanese author. And there's no news about it. It's not current. It's just something that we thought would be good for spring next year.
I think what Happy Reader does and some of the other magazines we've talked about do is reinforce and promote that idea of the moment where you can get away from the screen, get away from everything else, and just sit and enjoy this experience of reading. And I think it's interesting to see that there have been some websites that have tried to go down that route as well. So, you know, the danger with publishing websites is you get on this treadmill where you have to keep publishing content and content and content all the time, all the time, all the time. And some sites have tried to recreate that idea of the moment online. So I remember Newsweek experimenting with this a year or two ago, that they were only going to put out an edition once a week. That would be it. There would be no rolling stuff every day unless something incredibly major happened. So even online, people have tried to get back to this idea of, let's take a little bit of time out. Perhaps if you did that, people would value the content a bit more rather than just consuming it as this constant stream that they just sort of check on their phone and then move along. How do you get them to put value in what you're doing? How do you get to stop people and get them to spend some quality time with what you've got to say?
Quality time with quality printed matter. That's what we're all about here on The Stack. Great to hear the insights today of both Seb and Patrick. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming to see us here on the programme this week.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that does indeed bring us to the end of this 116th edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. A special thanks to my special guests, Seb, Amina, and to Patrick Burgoyne. Don't forget the special photography edition of Creative Review is out now. So head to your favourite local newsstand and pick that up. Thanks too to our producer, David Pleasant, and of course our studio manager, Claire Urban. Comments, queries, frankly, abuse, it's all welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget, we'll be back at the same time next weekend here on Monocle 24. You can catch up again or listen to past editions of the programme at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. For this edition, though, number 116, that is all. Have a great day. Bye.